good.
A double one would have.
Wait, we're gonna do it again?
3, 2, 1. Okay. The Sons of the Hunt podcast, season 5, episode 2, actually.
How about it?
Yeah, I looked it up.
How about it? Yeah, Googled it.
Yeah. We're back. This time not with just like a rambling episode about how we did a podcast and blah, blah, blah. I mean, it was an all right podcast. It was all right.
Indeed. I listened back.
It wasn't some of our best work.
Didn't lose me.
It was pretty good. It was all right. It was fine. Yeah,
passable.
But now we're actually going to get back into the kind of stuff that we used to be into, which is hunting stuff.
Indeed.
Outdoor stuff. Neat stuff.
Killing food.
Slick stuff.
Indeed.
Nice.
I like it.
But what this stems from is I posted a picture of, it was actually for, that you took. It was of the day that we were turkey hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of standing there and looking back, and I was like, Like, you know, I looked kind of confused.
I thought it looked pretty good. I don't know.
Yeah. It was a little GQ.
A little bit.
And, but anyway, I saw somebody at work was like, what are you carrying around? Because I don't know. I guess a lot of people don't wear full packs turkey hunting.
No,
not full mountain packs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and not everybody packs mortar and pestles into the woods
that day.
Yeah.
So yeah, but either way, it does look ridiculous. Like, yeah. I looking back at that picture, they're like, "Are you going on an elk hunt? Like, what is that?"
Yeah. Yeah, it was a lot. It was a lot, yeah. You know. But we had a job to do, man. You gotta have the right tool for the job. Tools,
right? And but since that day, I've been hunting with. I've been hunting with this pack before that.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, whatever. We decided, okay, hey, it might be a cool episode to talk about what we carry around in our packs and what packs we're carrying for turkey season.
Yeah,
because turkey season's only a couple weeks away here. So, that being said, should we start with the pack itself?
Yeah, I'd say so.
You go.
All right. So, I don't use a pack. No, I do. I have a field line, an old field line pack that I like to use if I'm not running my turkey vest. So, it all depends on what I'm planning on doing. If it's just me or if I'm taking my oldest kid or something like that and we're going to run and gun, sit on the ground, do some setups, then I'll run the turkey vest because it's just easier. I don't have to, because I can't tell you how many times I've left stuff leaning against a tree in the woods when we were like trying to make a move on a bird or something like that. And then your next thing you know, you're going back, trying to run back the last three spots you sat so you can go find your stuff.
Yeah.
So the turkey vest works out really good. And it's a Cabela's turkey vest. It serves me pretty well. It's got the fold out seat, which is pretty clutch.
Nice.
But, you know, everything I need is in it. You know, the field line pack is really good when I'm going with the blind.
Yeah.
Because if I'm going to be in a blind, I need different things. And, you know, we film a lot. So having extra batteries, you got to have somewhere to strap a tripod. You know, there's all these little, what do they call them, bibs and bobs or whatever that you kind of have to take along with you if you're going to film. And you learn over the years of doing it what's good and what's not, what you need to bring and what you can afford to leave behind.
Yeah.
So the pack comes in handy for that. So I guess it depends on the day and what my goals are. But for the most part, man, I just run the turkey vest.
Yeah.
Serves me well.
So coming off of what you just said with we've got more stuff than normal.
Indeed.
That we carry around.
Yeah.
So filming-wise. If you look back at like some of the original turkey stuff that we created, you see that we used to carry around that canvas sack.
Yeah.
That like tan canvas sack.
I remember.
And that just had a drawstring at the top. You opened it up and it was just one giant compartment.
It was like one of those laundry bags you had when you were at college.
Exactly. I was like, first of all, this thing looks badass. But I found after time, like, hey, they make stuff like for what you're trying to do.
Yeah, it has like compartments and everything, pockets. Yeah. And
so what I used to do as far as camera gear with that bag is I had this little square camera bag that I still carry. And this is like the basis same like outline of what I do during deer season.
Yeah.
I do the same thing here. I've got this square little camera bag and I would put it at the bottom of the pack and then I would take the tripod with the camera attached to it and put it in that bag, in the bag, bagception. And then I would just drawstring it. So then I would like, if I got somewhere, I could like pull it out like a katana.
That's actually pretty slick, man.
But now if you see the pictures of me, I don't even put the tripod away. I just carry it with the camera on it. Because I've gotten to the point where it's like something happens so quick that I can't even get it out. I can't pull it out.
I don't know if you remember that day when we went on that hunt, how many times I actually dropped my camera off the tripod. So you got to pay attention to the kind of tripod head you have if you're going to sling mine, that over your shoulder.
I mean, mine locks in.
Yeah, you have a good tripod head. I did not at the time. I had kind of some shitty, like, you know, square Walmart style thing. I don't know what the hell it was, but even when it was locked, it would just kind of fall out.
Yeah.
But the camera I was running was kind of heavy too, but it was just one of those things. I'm like, all right, it's time to upgrade to something that's a little bit more heavy duty.
But either way, this pack I bought. So now I am going to try so hard to not be stereotypical and say, I'm running the Mystery Ranch Beartooth 8. I'm running this silicone ring jobber here. I'm running these Sitka gloves. I don't run anything.
Come on.
I don't run.
Not even, no?
I run on that treadmill sometimes.
Fair enough.
Rarely.
If I'm on fire, man, you better watch out.
That's when he runs.
It's the only time.
Either way, the Mystery Ranch Beartooth 80. I bought it when I went out to Montana to do some elk hunting and kind of fell in love with it. It was, you know, I did a lot of reading online and, you know, they have like the Kifaru and some of these are like top of the line packs. And I'm looking at them, they're like over $1,000 for a pack. Mm. And I was like, well, how much am I going to use this thing? So I bought this one. I don't even remember what this was. I want to say like $500 maybe.
No, it's still a lot of money for a pack, but
yeah, but this thing has lasted me and I absolutely love it because it's really comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I could put a lot of stuff in that and carry a lot of weight and it doesn't feel that way based on like the hip strap.
Yeah.
So this thing has just, I have fallen in love with it 100%. I will buy another Mystery Ranch at some point.
Well, that's good because I'm looking for a decent pack because we had the Sitka one. Do you still have your Sitka one?
Yeah. So I could also talk about that for a minute too because so for archery season, I carry that Sitka, the tool bucket.
Tool bucket, yeah. Is it tool bucket, tool box, something like that, yeah.
I think it's the bucket.
It might be.
But now you look at that pack and that pack is the same thing. Mm-hmm. It's just opens from the top, big giant compartment. And that's kind of like the basis, I think, of if you're carrying camera gear around, you need that.
Yeah, it does come in handy if you're going to carry larger stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know, I just didn't really care for that pack all that much. I mean, for certain things, it's fantastic. I mean, I used it and I was like, thank God I have this.
Yeah.
But for the like for a constant like run and gun setup, it just doesn't work for me. So I'm looking for something different. So I wanted to ask you about that.
So specialized for archery hunting, I think. That pack I would put up against any other pack,
right?
Especially for self filming with those side bags.
Yeah, and that is pretty sweet. You can strap everything down and
the
stuff.
Camera arm in.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
Yeah, I like that. And you can put a tree stand actually on that, like a little a hang on tree stand.
Yeah.
For all you saddle hunters, your twinkle toes thing, you know, the little thing that goes on the bottom.
You for all you guys running saddles out there.
Oh, we love you guys. We're just ribbing you.
Hanging saddle.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, yeah, that pack.
I got a video
actually
for you.
Huh?
I got a video for you.
Oh yeah, that pack actually separates. Is that what you're saying? Like from the frame and the bag, and then you could put like a platform.
Yeah, you can strap a platform.
Strap your sticks to the side.
Exactly, and then you can put the pack back on it, and so it's really useful in that regard. But I'll tell you what, man, you're on your heels.
Yeah.
So I've done it. I strapped the pack on the stand on it. Now, granted, it wasn't the lightest stand on the planet, but
yeah, no, you know, I did the same thing.
Yeah, you're kind of leaning backwards.
Either way, we're getting off topic. We're trying to talk about our turkey bag.
Heard.
So, this the Beartooth, another feature that I also 100% fell in love with, would never go turkey hunting without this again. And man, this is the most bougie feature, is the bladder.
Oh yeah.
The hydration bladder, yeah. With the tube that comes out. Turkeys, tell me, like, you don't get in this situation two or three times a turkey season where you're rushing, you're a little late. You know where these turkeys are roosting, you're rushing out there, you get there, and now if you're like me and it's spring and you have allergies, you sit down and you just have the driest throat, and it's just like your nose is running, and now you got to try to work a mouth call.
Good point.
Little tube, little sippy. Mm-hmm.
Little sippy, clean it off the mouth, man. Call, get the spit off there, little spittles.
There's nothing better than ice cold water, like, just at your disposal.
Mm-hmm.
I never used to carry water with me in the woods. And now with this thing.
Oh, all the time. Yeah. I mean, since I started turkey hunting, I try to keep water with me. But yeah, I like to drink water. I'm one of those guys.
Water king.
Unless you're adventurous, then you can kind of fill that bladder up a little bit of monkey fist.
Monkey fist, yeah. Man, you might be onto something there.
I think so.
They start selling it in portable, like, to go bladders.
Yeah, yeah. Like right at the end nothing, cap at the register.
But, yeah. Nothing but bourbon.
Yeah.
A bladder of bourbon. Interesting.
Because they talk about taking a nap in the turkey woods.
Yeah. Filled with wild turkey.
Anyway. Moving on.
Yeah. So this pack, I guess, you know, it's obviously not made for turkey hunting, but serves me well. Has a nice little around the belt. It's got a little side pouch there. Keep my gloves. Keep a couple shells in there. Usually keep my mouth calls in there.
Yeah.
But I usually don't take the mouth call out, and I like to destroy them and suck all the adhesive off of them till they fall apart in my mouth.
Yeah, yeah. Good times.
That's how I treat my mouth calls. But I guess, the Mystery Man, it's just one big compartment, but it zips all the way around the top, and then it's got, like, a top bag.
Yeah.
That's got two compartments in the top, which is nice. I usually keep, you know, knife and a slate call. I don't know why. I use one call. I've left the house before with, like, the one call, and that's it.
And a shotgun.
And a shotgun.
A pointy stick. Yeah.
A pointy stick. I'm by far not the best caller. Don't have, like, an arsenal. I don't treat it like a fly fisherman who comes out and has got, like, 50 flies. And my dad is that way with calls.
Yeah.
Like, we'll be in the woods, and he'll be like, nah, this one. Let me try this one. And it's like...
I gotcha. Yeah, you know, like, I don't have a ton of them.
They're not biting on this. Maybe they'll answer this. Like,
Yeah, you know, and this is a good topic. Is kind of call technique and something I've kind of come to change the way I do, but we'll get into that in a minute. But, you know, as far as, like, calls, I'm a big slate call guy, and I used a couple different ones. I actually had one. It was from, I think, Primos. It was called, like, the Old Yeller. I don't think they make it anymore. I've had that thing since, like, turn of the century.
What, it sounds like a dying dog?
Maybe a little bit. Well, it depends who was using it.
You just put it out in front of you and blast it with a shotgun.
You just sit there and stare at it and cry. Yeah.
The Old Yeller.
But it was a good call. But I just, you know, they wear out.
Yeah.
You know, when you have them for a decade or plus, they start to kind of don't sound so good anymore. So I went through the stage where I was making my own calls for a while, and they weren't bad. And it was cool because, well, it was something you made. But I found, and it's killing me, I can't think of the name of the company that makes it, but it's called the Wet One. It's a call that is made out of Corian countertop. And you can just dunk that sucker right in the stream, pull it right out, and it sounds great.
That's a relatively newer call. Because I feel like they did a good job, like, advertising that on Facebook, like,
It's been around for a while. The guy that makes it, he's out of Pennsylvania. He hand makes all of his calls.
Yeah.
And it's killing me. I should have wrote it down or something. But yeah, it'll come to me. I'll think of it. But it's just a great design. It sounds really good. And turkey season in Northeast PA is kind of similar to trout season in Northeast PA. I mean, you know, this is when we get all of our rain for the year.
Yeah.
So you're bound to get wet. And I have one of those box calls that, you know, I don't even know who made it, Quaker, maybe some, one of the turkey companies made this box call that you, same, you can dip it in water and just call it, but it sounds terrible.
Yeah.
You know,
it works. I stopped carrying box calls.
Yeah, so I don't even bring it with me. So I basically use a mouth call every once in a while if they're in close, but I usually just stick with the old slate.
You know what? I usually have it with me, and I was trying to grab everything and get it together, and I've got to kind of see people who are watching see me keep looking over this way. I kind of have everything sitting here, but I usually carry a gobbler call with me too.
Really? How's that go again?
Well,
sorry about that. Yeah. No, that was good.
I know. I could do it with my mouth, and that's kind of why sometimes I just let it go.
There ought to be a competition for that kind of thing.
I'm not going to say what I want to say. Now I basically, as long as I've got those Quaker Boy mini mags, and they have to be little ones because I got a little boy mouth, I guess. I don't know. I can't use a full-size turkey call.
Listen, I think there's a lot of guys out there with a similar problem, man. Because when I first started using mouth calls, they make these like starter calls that are supposed to be easier to use. And they have like a little bit of a bubble on the top of them. So they fit in your roof, the roof of your mouth better. They were always too big for the roof of my mouth, man. Yeah. So I thought I had a little bit of a problem there. I was a little
narrow.
Yeah, man.
Narrow. It's not your palate.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not your palate. It's like
your upper jaw.
Yeah. Your mandible is the bottom part, right? Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. Well, you know, you all know what I'm talking about. The top of your mouth.
The cup part. That the top thing. Of your mouth.
Yeah, yeah. Where you put the turkey calls.
Where you put the turkey call holder. I just got a narrow one. But either way, yeah, man, I just use the Quaker Boy mini mags. I got some coming now. And I hope that they keep making them because they're the only company I know that makes a smaller call.
See?
The mini mag.
They're onto something.
Look it up, because honestly, they're way easier to use, too.
Yeah, see, I always have a hard time. Like, I'll go out and buy a call, like a mouth call. I'll go to a Hunter's Gallery or somewhere, you know what I mean? And I'll buy a call. They're like, oh, this looks good. How the hell are you supposed to know? You can't, like, open it up and try it. That would just be awkward.
Yeah.
But I just buy it and take a chance. And I'm like, oh, this one sounds good. But I usually buy, like, a 3-pack or something.
Yeah.
And then I can't remember for the life of me which one was good. So it kind of throws me off. Because they don't write on there what it is.
The mini mags come with like the boss hen, the raspy hen. Like they're all like, and then they've got like double reeds, double cuts on the edge.
Bat wing. And
usually it's just the straight one that I use.
Yeah.
The other ones, they just don't sound right, but I don't know, man. I honestly, I know there's going to be so many turkey hunters that would get angry at this, but like I've seen some really bad turkey callers.
I was just going to say.
Call turkeys in and kill them.
I've seen some really bad turkey calling come from a friggin' turkey.
Yeah.
I've heard some sick-ass birds.
I swear to God, at least once a year, I'll be like, oh, God damn, there's a guy here. Somebody's here.
Yeah.
And it just turns out to be some...
some drunk-ass hen.
Yeah.
She got into the old monkey fist out of your bag, and then here we go.
Monkey fist. We're never going to
escape
gonna
that. It's never going to die. Yeah. Oh, dude, I got such a freaking response to that, dude. It was funny. Monkey shoulder, apparently. Yeah. But yeah, man, that some of the turkeys are just, I mean, you know, there's a what a turkey sounds like, and then there's what turkeys kind of sometimes sound like.
And then there's what you think turkeys sound like.
Big time. Yeah, so we'll get into the whole calling sequence if you have, you know, I wouldn't say calling tips because, I mean, you know.
Yeah.
We're not those guys to be able to, I mean, who the hell are we? However, I have some observations that I've acquired over the years in doing this. I mean, I've been hunting turkeys, I mean, for probably since like 95, but.
Yeah, I would say I'm a better turkey hunter than I am a turkey caller.
Yeah, good call.
Like I predate on turkeys.
Mm-hmm.
It's not so much about the dance for me. As much as it is about eating a fried turkey sandwich. So
Touché.
Try to figure out how I get it done however I can get it done, basically. Let's move on to the next thing in our bags.
All right, next thing, what you got?
So if I'm going to prioritize something here, there's two routes I can go. One of these things has to be in my bag. But typically, it's all in there. But if I'm trying to, like, rank them here, the sandwich bag full of toilet paper is probably up here.
That's up there.
Because it's gotten to the point now where, like, the mid-morning shit has become a ritual in the Turkey Woods for me.
And you don't even drink coffee.
No, no. But it just, you know.
I guess it don't matter.
No, just pour it
coffee will
me.
Do it to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. It's tough to really pivot on something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I've got I earned a funny nickname where I work because I had to take a dump in the woods. And well, when you're out there and you don't have anything, well, you need to kind of assimilate. Mm-hmm. Just a FYI, moss is so soft, like green moss. If you could get your hands on it,
no way.
Honestly, if I can grow it in mass quantities, I'd just stop buying TP.
You could.
No, probably. But yeah. I'll tell you what, man, it works really, really well. And that being said, so if you need to kind of like adapt and overcome, yeah, moss is the move. Moss.
I always thought that the Boy Scouts preached pine cones.
What the hell?
I don't know.
Where'd you hear that?
Maybe that was something that was supposed to be a joke. I don't know. Here's my thing,
so.
Man. If it comes down to it and I have to go, I'm either coming back without a sleeve or a sock.
Fair enough.
You'd be
free balling it on the way back.
I'll cut like the lower part of my like sleeve off or something.
Listen, you guys. Sometimes you gotta make make do.
But that's
a good one, man. Teepee. A lot of people forget that. You know, start looking at calls and decoys and your decoy stakes, and you go through this whole list of shit you want to take out, and all of a sudden you get out there and you're like, oh no.
Oh, gurgle, gurgle.
Yep.
It's common. In my younger days, I feel like before I would like have enough sense to be like, well, maybe I should take some with me, I would just like fight it and it would go away.
Yeah. Well, good luck with that.
The old bowels can't do it anymore.
You almost had that big 4-0, man.
I would just summon all my power and just a simple reverse inhale, and I'd suck it back up into my body.
It's impressive. Yeah. It's impressive. It's like Pilates or something.
But another off-topic conversation here, and we won't get too far into it, is do you think wet wipes are lowering testosterone? Because, man, I love me a wet wipe.
Unless you call it a dude wipe.
Well, that kind of...
Then it just bounces it right back up a few notches.
Kind of leads to what I might do this year. I might get a pack of those for the bag.
They are glorious. I can't say it enough. I love them. I've got like 4 packs of them at home that go in every little toiletry bag I own, whether it's the kids going camping with scouts, whether I'm going with scouts, whether my wife and I are going somewhere on a trip. We don't sleep outside when my wife and I go on trips. She is anti-camping. She's a little bougie, and that's fine, but I still have a pack of those because, you know, you never know.
Yeah.
You never know, and they're nice, man.
It might be an upgrade for me this year.
Give it a shot, man. See what you think.
So, aside from the hygienics in my bag, what I would prioritize for Pennsylvania turkey season right next to toilet paper and something to wipe your ass with.
Right.
Rain gear.
Yep.
And all the surrounding pieces of rain gear. So what I got here, I bring my tree umbrella. So that's always in my bag, whether it's archery season or turkey season, because people forget, like, hey, you could sit on the ground and put that over your head too. And that's super nice.
Yeah.
I've sat like full mornings where we've had absolute downpours, like crazy hard rain, and just sat under a tree under that thing and was dry as a bone, you know?
Yeah, for how much room they take up in a pack.
Yeah, it's not much.
They don't. They
love
pack
those
up real nice. Yeah, I dig it. Yeah, that's a good one, man. That's a good one.
And the other thing, that actually came with my pack. It's like a raincoat for your pack.
Yeah, yeah.
Just pulls over the back of it.
Yeah, just about every pack out there has those now. Quality, I guess you get what you pay for. But yeah, dude, that's clutch, especially if you're carrying camera gear.
Yeah. I mean, well, and that's like the biggest thing. Like it has to be like a hurricane for me to not go.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of how confident I am that I can keep my stuff dry. Like, I'm at that point. Like, I feel pretty good. Even when I'm in a tree, I'll bring something that I could throw over my camera. You know what I mean? Which leads me to the last piece. Well, I guess there's two more pieces that keep my stuff dry. I carry around a piece. I usually have a couple pieces of camouflage canvas. I don't know where my dad got it, but it's waterproof. And it's just a piece of cloth, and I throw that on the ground. I sit on that so I don't get a wet ass.
Keep that dupa nice and dry, yeah, man.
I'm realizing there's a lot of stuff in my bag dedicated to my ass.
I'm keeping a list over here.
Dedicated so. to keep my ass happy. Happy ass is good turkey hunting.
A lot of turkeys died as a result of a happy ass, man.
Yeah, so, for sure.
I mean, don't go stressing it too much.
So think about this. Let me paint the picture. Do you ever get, like, rained on to the point, like, soaking wet?
100%.
And wet underwear?
Oh, yeah. I've got a video on YouTube.
Is there anything worse?
It's just like that, man.
It's just you standing in the rain.
No, we turkey hunted. I don't know if you ever saw that video where I've been trying to bow hunt a turkey, kill a turkey with the bow for years. And Damien was filming me, and I shot the feathers off that strutter's back. Did you ever see that video?
I think I have to show it to you.
But I mean, it was an absolute downpour. We were soaked. I don't know how the hell he didn't wreck his cameras, but he, you know, he was like carrying bags and stuff. Like, we knew it was going to rain, so he had like these Ziploc freezer bags that he was putting over cameras and stuff. But he made it work, and he did a hell of a job. This is when we were like really in the beginning of trying to figure this shit out, you know. And he did a freaking stellar job. He was running one camera on a tripod filming the turkey, and the other one he was hand-holding and keeping it on me. And, I mean, when I let go of the string, I actually slowed down the footage, because when I touched off the arrow, you could see the water just flying off the string. I mean, we were drenched. I wrecked my cell phone that day. It got soaked. But, yeah, I've been there, man. It sucks.
Yeah.
You know, but I bet I'm not getting out of them woods, man.
No.
If I got a shot at a bird, snowing, raining,
yeah,
there's hellfire. I'm staying, man, until I either get the bird or he goes the next county over.
Or my ass gets wet.
Or your ass gets wet.
Then I'm
you're
in out.
Trouble. Yeah, see you when I see you.
Yeah. Anyway, the only other thing, I usually have a rain jacket stuffed down in the bottom of the bag, but the other thing that I've been into lately in the last couple of years, which is like kind of a big switch, is I'm ditching rubber boots. They're out.
Mm-hmm.
Crispies are in.
How about it?
With gaiters. Waterproof gaiters. Game changer. So much more comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah, I like
the boots are waterproof. Then you got the gaiters that basically keep you dry up to your knee. To me, that's a game changer. So much more comfortable than rubber boots. Do you ever, like, spend a full day in the woods? And I think that maybe that's something else that should be mentioned while we're talking about all this. Like, we're out there for the long haul.
Mm-hmm.
Stay out there for the entire morning. And it's not like we hop spot, stop for breakfast somewhere. Like,
yeah.
I'm in the woods for the day.
Yeah.
Or, well, at least until noon.
Until noon for the first half of the season. Yeah.
But you do that.
PA.
Yeah, and you do that. You're hiking all over in rubber boots.
It sucks.
At the end of the day, like, you get to like 11 o'clock, your foot is like squeaking in the boot from sweat.
It's not good.
No. It's very uncomfortable.
I don't care for rubber boots. I've got a couple pair. And I mean, you know, I work outside for a living. And we get in, like, this time of year, there's two seasons where I work, man. It's mud season and it's dust season. And we're smack dab in the middle of mud season right now. And those knee highs are great for keeping your feet dry when you're in 6 inches of mud and, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff. But they are just not comfortable. My boot of choice for spring all the way through the fall, honestly, are Salomons.
Yeah.
I've got a pair of Salomons that are freaking stellar. They're so lightweight. They're comfortable. They're stiff enough where I can get on some shitty terrain and be comfortable in, you know, my stance and do pretty well. And I don't know, I know the Crispies are up there as far as cost.
Yeah.
I mean, but you get what you pay for, man. I mean, I used to be the, like, you know, I can sacrifice a little bit of comfort if I can save some money. I'm at the point in my life now where, like, screw that, dude. I'm past all that.
Good transition into another talking point here.
No, you're welcome.
I saw a meme the other day, and everyone has seen them. People making fun of Sitka gear.
I thought you were going with the AVNX decoys. That's been floating around. Have you seen that one?
Oh yeah, aren't they like $250? I have one that's so old it doesn't do what it is supposed to do anymore. Like, remember the big thing was like you blow them up,
yeah,
two breaths and they blow. Well, now it's like this thing where you blow into it, it's so it just dry rotted and fell out, so it's just an open hollow decoy.
Yeah.
That we could have the decoy conversation here a little bit because sometimes
maybe try some tactics on the second half, but
yeah, sometimes I carry them, sometimes I don't, but this is what I want to say about Sitka gear, okay? If you can afford it, you should try it because it's a comfort thing.
Indeed.
And if you can be comfortable, you're going to hunt longer and you're going to hunt, I don't know, better.
Just say it.
Yeah.
Because
you are going to hunt better if you can stay still, stay dry, stay warm.
Yeah, and that goes for like Kuyu, you know, the whole Sitka thing. I mean, there's some expensive clothing out there, and it's all in where you want to spend your money.
I remember what the meme was now. It's the Tiger Woods and the John Daly.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like the guy in his Tiger Woods, obviously, the Sitka gear with his Benelli full choke, TSS rounds. But the thing that's funny is that on the John Daly had the Mossberg
835.
Yeah. Or maybe, I don't know.
Because I've got the Remington 870.
That's what that's what was on John Daly. But either way, I mean, you see me head to toe in Sitka gear, but you also see me holding that Mossberg that has a gouge out of the stock that I've never cleaned.
Right.
That I'm still destroying birds with at 50 yards, 60 yards.
And that's it. You know, you got to figure out where you want to spend your money and what you want to do with it. I mean, this is a whole conversation that can go on for a while. But, I mean, you know, I have Sitka gear, and I love it.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lighter weight, you know, but I love it for turkey season because it's almost like a grayish pattern.
Yeah.
You know, this time of year, it's not green yet.
Yeah.
You know, and it blends really well. I love the Numa, you know, Numa camo and their clothing. I love that stuff. It's still a little expensive, but it's worth every freaking penny, dude. When I can go out in super shitty, cold, wet weather and be comfortable and sit all day, you know, I'd pay twice as much.
Yeah.
Just because of that comfort level. Because again, the older you get, the less you want to dick around with, you know, well, for lack of term, shitty stuff to keep your ass nice and warm. You got to keep your ass dry and warm, dude.
Once again, it comes back to the ass.
I'm telling you, it's vital.
It's dare I say the most important part of turkey hunting?
Well, I don't know. It's debatable. There's a lot of people driving to work right now listening to this going, "Oh yeah, man. Yeah. I'm on that ass, man.
You got
to
protect your ass.
Protect your ass, man. You got to keep it cold. Keep it warm.
Keep your ass cold."
Yeah, that was a little bit of a stretch.
Brain you fart. Know what, though? Sometimes I want my ass
cold. Well, I was going to say, it's
I like cool these breathable
is not bad.
Sheets. Yeah, you know, it keeps my ass cold at night.
Time and a place, man. Time and a place.
All right. We're like halfway through the pack, and we're at 33 minutes here.
Okay. I wouldn't know.
So I think what we should do to stay true to the podcast format, we'll cut it off here. Get a beer, and then I think we're going to keep going. We won't dive too much into the beer.
All right. Yeah, it's good beer.
We might.
Yeah. We'll see where it goes.
I have actually like a special beer.
Oh.
So maybe we will.
Maybe. Now, in our defense, the last beer review we did, we actually reviewed two beers.
Yeah. That one got out of hand.
Yeah, a little bit. But, you know. You figure if you average it out 15, 20 minutes for a beer review, and we're reviewing two beers, it's like, you know, 30, 40 minutes.
We probably could. We'll try to stay brief on it. Because I also don't know how it tastes. I didn't have it yet. So this will be a genuine review.
Okay.
And then we'll jump back into the gear. Because I'm almost through. Like really, there's not that much in the pack during turkey season.
Yeah, I'm same.
Unless I've got my mortar and pestle and oil and tarragon and...
Yeah, that was a little extreme, but boy, what a cool freaking day that was. I'd do that 100 times over.
Yeah, it was fun. All right, let's wrap this up, and then we will start again.
Sounds good.
we're back.
That was pretty damn tight, man.
Yeah. We're like that. We've been here.
Indeed. Our first rodeo.
There's been rodeos, and we've been at them.
Indeed. A lot of them. Jeez, I got to stop with that Indeed shit, dude.
That's like your thing, though.
It is my thing, but yeah. God.
Maybe I should throw out my catchphrase. Yeah. One more thing we can change. Change.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough.
All right. Let's knock this beer review out because I'm excited to try this. So
this is insane.
This is a brewery out of Lawrenceville, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And the name of the brewery is called The Drury.
The what now?
D-R.
I didn't even look at the can. I was looking at it, but I wasn't really. Oh, I thought that was the name of the beer.
The Drury.
Okay.
Remember, you an Office fan?
Oh, yeah.
When Dwight lies about going to the dentist,
mm-hmm.
and Michael's like, what's his name? It's like, Crentist. He's like, so, wow, sounds a lot like dentist.
Indeed.
Maybe that's why he became a dentist. But anyway, the Drury Brewery.
All right, just real quick, I got to tell you a story. So I used to work at a bank. I used to sell financial products, right? And I had a client. He was a dentist. His name was Dr. Oral Payne. No shit.
Come on.
Yep. Craziest thing ever. I'm like, come on, man, really? I've got stories about people with names that match their jobs, but that's another podcast. But since we're on the topic, I had to throw that one out there.
Oh, I thought there was going to be a punchline to this.
No, sure. That's legit. That was his name, Oral Payne. P-A-Y-N-E.
Man, he had two career paths he could go down. And he went down the respectable one.
Apparently.
Good for him.
His parents must have stayed together.
Yeah. Good for him.
All the respect to all those single home people.
Yeah.
Single parent folks. Anyway. Well,
it happens.
All right, Drury.
So this is called The Brighter Side of Haze. I've had some beers from these guys. This thing is insanely opaque.
Listen, man, I've had a lot of beers with you, and I honestly can't say I've ever seen anything like this. This is, close maybe,
but
I can't think of what it would be.
If I shine a light into the camera, is it going to blind everything?
Nope. Especially when you're shining it through that. Oh, well, there you go.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
We're going to find out. But it gets the point across.
Yeah.
Like, this is thick. Like, I could, it's like, you know, was it Dairy Queen that, like, hands you the thing upside down?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm close. Trying that.
Good thing
you moved that book.
Yeah. Anyway, this is called The Brighter Side of Haze.
I'm interested.
Let's give it a taste and see what this tastes like.
All right.
All right, so I have a little bit of the bottom of the crowler, and I could taste it. There's some hop burn in the bottom.
Yeah, you poured mine first.
Yeah,
I'm getting a little bit of hop burn at the end.
You getting a little bitterness?
A little bit.
Okay, it's not terrible.
I'm not mad at it. Yeah,
I like the dankness. I like what they call green IPAs, where it's like you can taste the hop. It's dank, maybe a little bit more dank than tropical. I'd go with that
because I mean, there's not a lot of fruitiness in it, and there's not a lot of sweetness.
Well, I'm pretty sure that this thing is hop saturated.
Yeah,
you don't get to that color without dumping a ton of hops in. This is definitely living up to the name. What does it live up to the name? Because it's not bright.
More bitter. I don't know. Maybe a little bit. I guess I could see it.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have gone that direction with the name.
I would have called it like Dank Haze.
Yeah, something like that. But I mean, listen, if I were to pick on something, it would be the finish.
Danker side of haze.
I think if I were going to pick on anything, it'd be the finish. Oh, other than bitter. That, it's good. And I don't dislike a bitter finish.
No.
I don't. It just doesn't, I don't know, like it doesn't match like the front and the back. You know what I mean? Like, when you first drink it, it doesn't match the finish. Does that make sense? Yeah, very good. Bingo, baby!
That's what you were trying to say.
That's exactly what I was trying to say.
It's good, though.
Dude, I'm writing that down. That is going to be a next term. See, I'm working on my beer terminology, man.
You're taking notes.
I am. And you know, the carpet doesn't match the drapes, buddy, so... Mark
class
that down.
Is in session. Mm-hmm.
We're going to have a Google Doc, just like 9 pages of
it. So if I'm trying to describe, I mean, it does have like a nice body. It's like, I like that in an IPA. Mm-hmm. Like it's like thick.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely thick.
Not like milkshake thick, but like it's got some weight to it.
Yeah. It's got like the mouthfeel.
Mm-hmm. It's oh, like here we go.
Kind of like, I don't want to say it's creamy, but it's like, consider the lager that we just drank.
Yeah. Well, I was gonna say, yeah, like, yep, that's, it coats your palate a little bit.
Yep.
Yeah, I like it, man. It's not bad. And I gotta say, for it being, what was the IBU on it?
IBU,
ABV?
ABV, 8.3.
Right? That does not taste like an 8.3 beer.
So this was canned on 3/27/24, so it is pretty fresh. The longer this crowler sat around, all that burn would go away. So
fair enough.
It's still
pretty green. It's still pretty fresh.
Relatively young beer.
Yeah,
but I mean, it's good.
Yeah, I would be interested in seeing what this would be like in about another couple of weeks.
We aged a little bit.
Yeah, it's still good. I'm not mad at it by any stretch of the imagination. It's good. It kind of hits a lot of the notes that I like in an IPA.
So now take another sip of it, because I feel like it's kind of starting to change.
It's breathing
as it gets warmer.
Yeah.
As it breathes and gets warmer.
I think there's something to that. Like when you open a bottle of wine and you let it breathe.
Oh, yeah, for
sure. I think there's something to that also with beer. I mean, not your Bud Lights or your Miller Lights or what have you.
Yeah.
But with something like this where there's a lot of complexity to it, I think letting it sit for a minute and you don't want it to go flat by any means, but you let some of that, is it effervescence? See, I write that one down too. Effervescence. Yeah.
Cool. Write it down because I want to see how you spell that.
Oh, no way.
This definitely has a good amount of bitterness to it, so like a lot of hop. Jay's vomiting. Jay does not.
Wrong pipe.
No. No, this is a good IPA. I have had a few from, and you look at your glass, mm-hmm. man, it is just lacing.
Lacing, yeah.
That's typically a quality beer.
Indeed. Now, so I got like the virgin pour, man, the first pour out of the can.
Yeah.
So it's, you can see the difference. There's a physical difference in, you know, a very visual difference in my glass versus Mark's. But
I got the last tee on the hog.
Mm-hmm. I'm writing that one down too. Holy shit. Yep. This Google Doc is getting thick, man. Thicker than a Snicker.
Yeah, this is good. I wish I let it go.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's all right. It's still good. I'm not going to lie. I mean, I'm not mad at it by any way. I mean, it's pretty tasty. I'm enjoying it. But I could definitely see it mellowing out a little bit.
Yeah.
Knowing what I know now, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? But yeah, it's good. I dig it. Where'd you get this?
I purchased it off of a man off the internet. I don't know how else to explain it. It was a aftermarket beer.
This is black market.
I trade beers. I trade beers. I deal in beers.
Okay, fair enough.
It's from Lawrenceville, New Jersey. You got to be down there to get it. Otherwise, you're not going to get it. You know
it's
what
a bit
mean?
Of a so run.
I got it off the beer black market.
Listen, you got to do what you got to do.
I've made friends in the craft beer industry.
All right. I should say so. Yeah. Well, kudos, man. This is a good one.
Yeah.
Good. All right. Hey, that was a pretty good beer review, man.
Pretty concise.
I like it.
We didn't talk about
I'd say
any
take,
flavor.
I'd say get after it. Well, listen, I mean, it tastes like grapefruit. No, it doesn't taste like grapefruit. It has grapefruit notes, but no, I mean, I don't know, man.
No, it does. This has big grapefruit energy just based on the bitterness right now.
And the kicker is I freaking hate grapefruit.
Grapefruit,
which blows my mind.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I can drink an IPA that has a grapefruit essence and I like it.
Yeah.
But if I eat a grapefruit, I want to spit it at somebody, whoever gave it to me, because it's just not, I just don't like it.
It's not for everybody, but this has a little bit of the grapefruit rind feeling going on.
Okay.
Definitely not very sweet.
No.
But then again, like a West Coast IPA drinker is probably going to love this. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I dig it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can live with it for sure.
And that's a review.
Yeah. Good looking out there. Brewing?
The Drury.
Drury. There we go. That was close.
Monkey fist. Brewing.
Yeah, brewing. Good beer.
Anywho, we could jump back into our turkey packs.
I dig it.
And turkey hunting.
Yeah.
And so we left off with warm asses, keeping our asses warm.
Yep.
Dry. And that's kind of, you know, aside from the stuff that I named, I've got a gun over my shoulder. I've got decoys sometimes, and I'm usually carrying. I'm not going to get into all the Sitka clothes that I've been wearing and the layers and stuff. I mean, we could do a clothing podcast someday, but that we're going to be scratching the bottom of the barrel.
Heard.
Talking about clothes.
Yeah. I mean, it is what it is. You know, with turkey hunting, it's less about your camo pattern and more about just sitting the hell still.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can go out there in a pair of blue jeans and a flannel jacket and probably kill a turkey if you're not moving around too much.
Or get shot. Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend the whole red flannel thing. Yeah, my bad.
You get that, or the red...
The red handkerchief. Yeah, like
handkerchief. Yeah.
The old movies, the films they show you.
Guy's just like constantly wiping his face.
With a you're going to get shot, bro. You probably deserve to get shot.
I remember watching that as a 11-year-old at the...
The Hunter Safety Course?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to another one.
Nice.
Dude, this would be probably my 15th.
We should make one of those.
A video? Yeah. Like
safety video?
Yeah. That'd be great.
We get Brian involved. Brian's a horror film buff.
All right.
We definitely want to make it a horror film for children.
Sure. What other kind of horror film is there?
Yeah. I mean, you want to prove a point. Anyway, I guess the last couple of things that I would say that these items that I have in front of me here are universal. These are in my bow hunting pack, and this pack, any pack that I'm carrying around, I pretty much have this stuff. And I don't think I'm leaving anything out besides the camera gear.
Yeah.
People are going to say I'm soft for this one.
Charger block. Bank. Yep, they're great.
I've been a big fan of these. I think it's just called Out XE.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're heavy.
Yeah.
But they're good. They'll charge my phone from like empty to full like 8 times.
Yeah.
So this one, like I'll charge it up and I don't have to charge for like the rest of the season, pretty much. It also has a solar panel on the back. Don't really mess with it. It also has a light.
Look at you.
Pretty nice. So I like this a lot. It's got 2 USB ports on it. So like if I have something else I need, like I'll bring like the GoPro charger because a lot of times like the GoPro needs like a little shot of juice.
Sure.
If it's cold. So charger, definitely always have that in the bag. Headlamp. Never ever use it unless I'm taking a deer out of the woods in the dark.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of going in with lights blazing. Some guys do it, and that's, you know, more power to you, it's just not my thing. I would say I came up hunting. My grandfather made me walk through the woods in the dark. It scared the bejesus out of me.
Yeah.
But you know what? That's just how you did it.
I'll, like, walk to the back garage with no light, and Bridget will be like, what are you doing? And I'll be like, I could see out there. I have a film that comes over my eyes, and I can see at night.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Maybe.
What the hell was that movie?
I don't know, it's like a vampire thing, right?
No, I was, what the hell's his name? Is it Vin Diesel?
No way.
No.
Val Kilmer?
Nope. He was like in a prison where it was dark and he had surgery on his eye. Never mind, it doesn't matter. Moving on.
Sounds badass.
Yeah, it was Vin Diesel, yeah, I'm pretty sure. Good movie.
Anyway. Yeah, I take people hunting with me all the time.
Yeah.
And they're like, they've got flashlights and I'm like, smack them. You turn that on, I'll bite your wrist.
Hold my pocket.
Yeah. You just follow me. And they're like it. But it seems like every time I take people hunting too, it's usually during like doe season with the rifle.
Right.
And, you know, cold, overcast. So when we go out, freaking pitch black.
Yep.
But you could still
just
see.
Listen to my footsteps and follow them.
Yeah. And we're never walking anywhere tough. But anyway, moving on. Don't need a light when you're walking in. If you do, I'm judging you.
Heard.
People are going to laugh at me for this.
Mm-hmm.
but these are the only type of optics I carry around. I don't put them on my freaking chest in a pouch. I don't need that every time I go and shoot my freaking bow in my backyard. Okay? Put them on top of my bow. Freaking losers.
Well, I do that.
No. You're.
I've got a bino harness. I like it, but I use it for work.
I pop these out like very rarely. Like if something's that far and I can't tell what it is with my bare eyes, I'm not shooting it.
Right.
Like doesn't matter.
Fair enough.
Once in a while, like I don't know. Like if we're in the field that I hunt. And there's a black dot down at the bottom of it. That's mm-hmm. turkey. Yep. Okay, we're going to go down there. I don't need to look.
Yeah. See, I paid a lot of money for my binoculars, so I'm going to use them every chance I get. I'm like looking across the kitchen. I'm like, are those Cheerios open?
Is that my name on that envelope? That's,
yep.
Ugh, it's a bill. No. But anyway, yeah. I don't know. I think these are Swarovskis. No, they're Steiners.
Yeah, but they're nice binoculars.
Yeah,
Mr. I don't know. Fancy Pants over there.
I think I got them in like a 22 shoot or something one mm-hmm. time. I don't know. Most of the time, the one is freaking fogged up. And I don't know.
Isn't you don't need a lot.
I don't.
I do for a living requires good glass.
Yeah,
you know, so I have to have good glass. But I like the chest rig I have. I mean, this is what I run. You know, I run.
Jesus
Christ. No, I do. I cheaped out. I got a pretty inexpensive, and I'll tell you what, it's funny. I bought this, I think it's called Spica. It's like some kind of harness, a binocular harness. I think it's out of like New Zealand or something. I think it's just where they talk. But it's a Spica.
Taika.
But anyway, it's pretty nice. I mean, it was like $60. It's got pockets freaking everywhere.
Like a kangaroo.
But you know what? I mean, some of these binocular harness companies, it's like you pay $100 just for the pouch for the binoculars. Then you got to buy the pockets.
Oh, the add-ons.
Yeah. This was
this one comes with like, a subscription.
Right? This was $60. You get everything. But yeah, I like it. But yeah, I don't usually take binoculars turkey hunting.
Yeah. I mean, these don't are just them. Typically in my pack.
Mm-hmm. But mine are big. Those are nice and small, compact.
Yeah. I'm not saying that like... I won't buy a pair of Mavens this year.
Mm-hmm.
Like I might.
Yeah.
Like it would be nice to have like something nice in the summer for scouting.
Yeah.
Like I like doing that. Like parking like somewhere where I could see a bunch of fields like in the truck and just sitting there. That might be nice. Actually my dad has like a spotting scope that I take every once in a while. And that's, I don't know. It's like a cheap spotting scope that we hold it.
Yeah.
Like I don't even put it on a mount. So...
Optics. Don't clip it on your window or nothing? Come on, man.
I don't have one of those, no.
Come on.
No. Yeah, optics aren't really a big
thing. A big part of your system?
No.
Yeah.
No. Moving on. Always have the buck knife on me. I keep that thing on me. This is the, what did we say this was? The 102?
Yeah, I think so.
I used to have, what was it? The next one up, the bigger
one. The 116?
One. Yep. I lost that in the woods. And then got this. And
it's basically a miniature version of that.
Yeah. And this is, it's keep it sharp, does what it needs to do. Indeed. Don't need anything crazy there. Keep a sharpener. What I already.
There it is.
This sharpener on me, Falkniven.
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 Yeah, it's a Swedish company. They make knives, they make outdoor tools, they make stuff like that. But I'm a kind of a nerd like that, so I'm familiar with them.
Yeah.
They make actually good clothing, too.
Falkniven.
Mm-hmm.
What am I thinking of? The clothing company that all the hipsters are wearing these days. It's Fall something. Fall Raven?
Maybe.
Fall Raven. It's got like a fox.
Like Patagonia? I don't know.
It's something like that. Hipsters are wearing it now.
Nerds.
Yeah. A little sharpener I keep on here. And then I think that this is the thing that you're going to like the most, because you're into this kind of stuff. This is my baggie of, like, emergency stuff. Zip ties, matches, electrical tape. There's a bunch of throwaway contacts in there, because, if I get something in my eye, put another contact in. I got some rope in here, a couple of carabiners, a little multi-tool, a lighter with a bunch of like duct tape wrapped around it. I don't know. You know,
that's good stuff, though.
Stuff that might get me out of a jam. You know? Something I could light a fire if I need to.
Yeah, I'm usually not all that far from my truck when I'm out with, because again, I hunt with my kids a lot now, you know, so it's a little different. But like, you know, when Damien and I did that that turkey hunt on the Appalachian Trail that one time, I mean, we were gone for 3 nights, 4 days, and you can't just run back to the truck.
Yeah.
I mean, you're miles and miles out. I mean, with no cell service, nothing. Which is funny because at the time Damien had a turkey gobble as his like ring, not his ringtone, but for like his text messages, his notifications, you know. And we were coming out and we hit the one spot where the cell service finally kicked back in and his freaking phone started gobbling. I about shit my pants because we were out there for 3 freaking days, 4 days looking for turkeys. We didn't see shit. And then all of a sudden we hear a gobble on our way back to the truck. And sure enough, it was his phone starting to catch up to, but it was a good trip. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. That's fun.
That was hard, man. That was a hard hunt.
Yeah.
But it was worth it.
Yeah. But it's awesome.
Yeah. It was fun. It was more about the story and the, you know, just the epic adventure than
sleeping
it was.
Sleeping in the woods, cooking in the woods.
That's what it was. You know,
Fun.
I forgot my, like my little spoon and knife and fork kit shit. You know what I mean?
It's
like,
so you had to whittle.
I did. I still have the spoon.
Nice.
It's pretty awesome. I made a spoon. We just sat around screwing around one day by the river, and I'm like, I'm going to make a spoon. And sure enough, I carved out a little spoon. I took way too much shit with me on that trip, you know, because you think, I'm definitely going to use this. Yeah, nope.
So, yeah, something people will realize after all the stuff I just went through is, like, I don't, like, pack for weight.
Right.
Like, this pack, when all is said and done, is, like, 45 pounds.
Right. But, I mean, how far are you going from the truck?
I don't know. How far did we walk that
day? Oh, Jesus Christ. You know? Yeah. Oh, fair enough. Like, I mean, we weren't far from the truck, but we put on a bunch of miles that day. I mean, because that's a big piece of property that you hunt on.
Yeah.
And we were down and up and down and up. I mean, there's like a valley with a river going through it. So you're down to the river, back up the valley, then you're down, but come up the other side. Well, nope, there's something
going on
the other
side. And then we're up to, like, when you're at that river and then you go to the top, you're pushing, I don't know, is it like 1,200? Feet in elevation, like it's up there.
It is. It's a big piece.
Yeah,
it's a big piece. I had a great time that day. I mean, we worked our ass off for it.
Yeah,
I mean, we earned every second of that hunt. But
that's why it's fun.
Indeed, you know? That's what I like. I mean, you go out, you can go out and shoot one by 7:30, and you're done. But
yeah,
and that's cool. Don't get me wrong, it has its place. But I like earning.
I mean,
it
I'm at
bit.
The point that I think I've made something else out of it that, like, I don't think it's not a traditional, like, turkey hunt.
Yeah.
At least it doesn't feel that way to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's the guys that go out there and they're like, we're going to roost one. We're going to get right under them. We're going to call them. And it's just like, I don't know.
It's just a different,
approach it.
Look at it. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It's fun. I mean, there's a whole dance to it. Like you said earlier, you know what I mean? You get out there, you scout a little bit. I don't do a lot of scouting anymore. I'm going to a new property this year. I don't know. I'm going to try it. So I'm going to do a little bit of scouting for it. But, I mean, if there's birds there, there's birds there. If they're not, they're not.
They're there.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And I'm pretty sure I've gotten some intel from some people around that there's birds there. But, I mean, listen, I've gotten pretty good at calling birds over the year. I'm no professional, but, I mean, I've killed a lot of birds, you know, getting them to come my direction.
Yeah. And that's the point. Like, I'm proficient enough. Like,
that's it. You're good enough. You don't got to be great. You just got to be good enough.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm good enough to sound like the easy hen.
Yep.
You know what I mean? That's that's my goal. I want to sound like the easy one.
Yep. Come get me, big boy.
Yeah. And
is he coming?
Yeah.
Is that a 10? Did I get a 10 ring?
No.
No. I don't like that stuff.
No. The calling thing is cool. That's a neat conversation because everybody's good at it. Everyone's the best. You know what I mean? Myself included, I'm the best. I'm the best until I'm not.
Yeah.
Until, you know. But you know, the coolest thing about I think the last couple of years is when you are like the hunter. What I mean by that is, like, you know, when somebody goes hunting with you, they follow you.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you're leading the way, you have your technique, you have your tactics, you know what I mean? And I've had that for, I've developed these tactics in the way I operate over the last, you know, couple of decades. And then you and I went and hunted together. And it was unique because I wasn't leading.
Mm-hmm.
I was following you, and I was kind of playing off your moves, and I was like, man, you hunt totally different than I do.
Yeah.
But it was cool because it's like, all right, I always wondered, like, you know, I always wanted to change up my tactics, but I always did okay, so it ain't broke, don't fix it. But you kind of do, not, I wouldn't say opposite, but like you're more of a, let's sit, call, okay, we're going to move. Let's sit, call, we're going to move.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't move as much as you do, but I mean, you have success with your tactics.
Yeah.
I've had success with mine. So the cool part about it is, like, a lot of people just hunt differently.
Yeah.
But people do well.
That's,
you know what I mean?
And that's why I've never killed one of those turkeys where, like, my dad will say this and he'll be like, you know, yeah, I called and called and I sat there and I called a little bit more and I just stayed. Then I just got quiet and I just sat there.
Mm-hmm.
Sure enough, 45 minutes later, here he comes. I'm like, 45 minutes? What are you doing? What, you sat there the whole time?
Taking a nap?
Yeah. You're just sitting?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you're pretty anxious. You get the move, man. If it ain't coming, I'm going. I'm going after him.
Yeah.
But obviously, you've had success doing that, you know?
And it's different if I'm, like, hearing them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I'll sit there and duke it out. I've gotten myself into a lot of, like, standoff situations where they're coming and they get hung up.
Yeah.
And then it's like, calling. I'm just like, all right, at this point, you have to move to make that sound come from a different direction. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Otherwise, he's not going to come.
No, that's it. And I mean, that's where there's sometimes benefits to having two guys.
Yeah.
You know, one guy can get up, walk away, and call 30 yards back, and all of a sudden it sounds like he's leaving. That bird will come right into the shooter.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I got hung up on, man, when I first started getting successful with calling was, I just love to hear him gobble.
Yeah.
So I'll overcall.
Yeah.
Just because I want to hear him gobble.
Just to make him gobble.
Yeah. So that's one thing I've gotten away from. You know, move their feet, not their beak. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, just get them. If they're gobbling at you, you know, you know how they cut you off. You start calling and they cut you off.
Yeah.
Well, now I'm going to sit.
Yeah.
I'm going to be quiet. I'm going to see what happens.
One of my go-to tactics is making noise. Like the rustling.
Oh,
and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. I love that.
That seems to, like, if you think they're close enough to be able to hear it, that's usually like a game changer.
Yeah. That usually kind of pulls them in the last,
gives
them that last tipping point, you know. That, and it's overlooked a lot, and we've talked about this before, is calling to the hens.
Yeah.
You know, I've shot a few birds because they came in tow of a hen that was pissed off at me because I was showing her up.
Yeah.
You know, she'd cluck 3 times, I'd cluck 4 times. She'd yelp 4 times, I'd yelp 5 times. And
mimic her.
Just one up her.
Yeah.
And she'd come in to, you know, let me know and let me have it. And sure enough, that gobbler's coming with her.
Yeah.
He might not make a sound, but he's coming.
Yeah.
He's following that, you know, nani-nani.
Yeah.
So
he knows what he wants.
That's it. So he's going to go where it goes. So, you know, you get a shot at it.
It's a good tactic, man.
Indeed.
I can't tell you how many times in the last few years, though, it seems like I've done that, and I've called the hen in, and the gobbler, like, freaking just hung up out of range.
Yeah.
I've had that happen several times in the last, like, couple years.
Yeah, they're going to do what they're going to do. I mean, you know, if you think about it, we're trying to reverse nature. You know what I mean? The gobblers are gobbling, so the hens go to them.
Right.
We're trying to pull them to us.
Yeah.
So you're already at a disadvantage. You know what I mean? So, you know, you have all these different tactics, you know. Scraping in the leaves, trying to do some purr tactics, and, you know, slip a couple clucks in here and there and whatnot. So you just try to these different combinations to figure out, you know, what's gonna get them to move. And sometimes it works and it's a good day. Other times it doesn't, and you gotta get up and chase after them.
Yeah, and you know what you definitely don't have to do?
What's that?
Is get behind a freaking decoy.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. I gotta look for it. Okay, now I'll talk to you about it off camera because there's potential legalities involved.
I mean, here, this is the only thing I'm going to say. If you get behind a decoy and you have it attached to your gun, get shot in the face. because you're like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Are you that bad? You that desperate?
Have you seen the ones where the guys grab the birds? Where they just pan the turkey and they sneak up and grab one?
No.
Ah. That's attractive.
I don't want to talk about
that. Not even a little. No, that's just it, whatever. People are gonna do. People are people, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But
yeah, that's pretty crazy. I've seen
just
a few
like,
of those.
I just don't understand the attraction. Like,
it's a different tactic.
My favorite. I've seen a bunch of these where they've got the gobbler like mounted on. Like they might as well just get like a turkey like roosting, mounted like just around their barrel. Just like walk through the woods with it. It would look so stupid because that's how you look anyway. But did you ever see one where they get so close and the guy freaking shoots and just misses because they're
the pattern's too tight?
Yeah. Missed twice. Oh.
Yeah.
You can't look like more of an ass.
I'll tell you, man, everyone's going to try and push the envelope. There's always somebody going to push that envelope.
And maybe this is hypocritical, but I mean, like, everything for content. Everything for likes. Like,
I see where you come from the hypocritical point, but yeah, I don't know. Yes and no.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I'm not desperate for likes.
Right.
Like, I'm not going to go out there and do something wild. Like, do you see the fishing trend currently? Just seeing how hard you could freaking set the hook on a fish. And these guys are
that's
like,
a thing?
Yeah. Ripping bass out of the water.
Oh my God.
It's annoying.
Yeah, annoying. I could see that. That's a little disrespectful.
These little like dorky, like broccoli head Florida kids in Crocs, like just
that's pretty specific.
Ripping. Just ripping bass as hard as they could. It's those kids. It's that group of kids that is creating this stupid kind of content. The
Tide Pod kids.
It's the attention epidemic.
Fair enough. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's a good conversation too.
Who raised y'all?
All right.
Pathetic.
God damn it, boys.
Anyway, that's enough hating.
Right.
Hate.
Well, that's the thing, man. Everyone's gonna push the envelope at some point, and it is what it is. You know what I mean? That, and again, since we started doing this back in 2018, we've had conversations about what social media does to the hunting population, good and bad.
Yeah.
And it, you know, you almost have to look for the good anymore because it doesn't take you too long to find the bad.
Yeah.
But you know, it's there's still a lot of good people out there trying to do something in the name of, you know, education or teaching or learning something. But there's just, you know, there are a lot of TikToks out there. You know what I mean? And I didn't mean that as a noun.
TikTokers.
Yeah, a bunch of TikToks. But, you know, it is what it is, man. And those TikToks are now old enough to buy firearms and go kill shit.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're going to have these things. But, you know, six in one, half dozen the other, I guess. I mean, because there's a lot of people out there who are really into, you know, advancing the sport, advancing, you know, the outdoors. I mean, I just got into like this. I just read this article. In fact, I sent it to some friends of mine about turkeys and the state of, you know, where they're at. And, you know, in regards to like nest raiders and stuff like that, like, you know, how people are starting to manage their own properties for turkey. And the number one way to do that is to start taking out the nest raiders. Like, I think it was like raccoons, skunks, and possums.
Rakens.
Are the top three that just destroy nests.
Yeah.
So you start to trap, but the problem with trapping is this fur prices are down.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of work,
time consuming.
Exactly. Yeah. So nobody really does it anymore. So you start running in these overpopulated areas of these nest raiders, and all of a sudden turkey numbers are down, and everyone's like, I don't know why I can't kill a turkey.
I think we've talked about it. I just don't have it in me for trapping.
Nah, you know, I've dabbled.
If it's a mouse trap,
yeah,
I'll trap.
I'm all over it. Yeah,
I'll trap mice.
No, I've dabbled in trapping, and honestly, I just don't have the time for it.
If it's the kind of trap that kills the animal,
yeah,
I'm like down.
The, you know, the I forget what they call it, the body grippers or whatever. You know, like for beavers and stuff like that. But,
man, but like coyote trapping,
yeah, it's tricky because you don't always get a coyote. You know,
yeah, but you do, and it's just like,
Yeah, it's tough.
It's icky for me.
It is. You know, not, it's not for everyone.
And
it's necessary.
Do you see this? There's some page that keeps spamming all the Pennsylvania groups, the Pennsylvania hunting groups, and it's like, Pennsylvania, wake up. There's coyotes out there.
Oh, my goodness. They're running with the bobcats. It's kind of like
elk licking or elk. Some, I don't know. Some stupid page. I don't know. Just, it was just, you know.
Yeah.
There's sick lots of sick for attention. But it's just like, wake up. And it's like, everyone on the page is like, do you think we don't know that there's like coyotes out there like eating fawns and turkeys and stuff?
Yeah. You know, and honestly, the coyotes aren't really the threat. Because once the turkeys are out there, it's getting them to hatch.
Yeah.
You know, turkeys for tomorrow, you've heard of those guys, right? Have you ever heard of them?
Maybe.
It's kind of like a National Wild Turkey Federation, right? And I actually, they have a podcast that I've listened to a few times, and it's all about, they get like all these biologists and stuff like that from like Auburn and all these different, you know, Florida, you know, Florida State. And they have conversations about like the lifespan of the turkey, like the lifespan of a gobbler and, you know, nesting stuff. And it's pretty interesting if you're a turkey nerd. I'm a turkey nerd. So if you're into that sort of stuff, it kind of, it's interesting shit. But, you know, they just talk about like how people want to hunt turkeys and they want turkeys on their property, but they don't do anything to improve the habitat.
Right.
You know what I mean? So that's a whole nother conversation. I don't know how far we into the second half now. I don't know if we need to dive into turkey habitat.
No, but we're 36 minutes in.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Here's what I would say about it. Like, if you're managing a good habitat, like, you really shouldn't be managing specifically for one species.
No, that's fair.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, the like foundation is like get bees on the property, like
right.
like the tree, like pollinators, and like you start with the basics. Like if you have like a good songbird,
right,
like attraction to your property, like everything else just like kind of snowballs from there.
And that's it. You know, like where I work, we have all these crazy projects that we do up there, and we have this one project called the Golden Warbler Project, right? So it's these songbird called the Golden Warbler. Now, my numbers may not be exact, so don't quote me, but I want to say there's about like 5,000 breeding pairs left or something like that. And they're mostly like Midwest, but there's a large population of them around here. So we were able to work with the state and getting a grant to create this habitat for this golden winged warbler. And, you know, we basically opened up the canopy on these trees in certain areas of the forest, and we opened it up, and now the underbrush is going to grow up because that's where they like to nest. They nest in this low brush, you know, thick undergrowth stuff. So the problem with that is everything can reach their nest, you know, like all the little scavengers, the skunks, the possums, the raccoons, the foxes, the fisher cats, all that stuff can kind of eat their eggs and raid their nest, so they don't get to hatch good well. So we created these sections of the property where we, you know, logged it out and created this great habitat for them. But in doing so, we created good habitat for grouse. We created good habitat for wild turkey.
Yeah.
We created wild habitat for the bees, for other songbirds, for all these other non-huntable species that will benefit from those improvements. But it's, you know, about being good stewards. I mean, we've got a lot of property that we have that we're, you know, fortunate enough to be able to manage. So being able to manage that property appropriately is challenging at times because you don't know which direction to go, you know?
Right.
So by having programs like that out there, it makes it great that we can, yeah great, we're going to do something great for this songbird, but now wait to see, you should see how many wild turkeys we got up there now. It's insane. Yeah. There's wild turkeys running everywhere. And we do management, you know, in that regard. So it's, you know, but not everybody has that much property. Some people are hunting at their uncle's farm that's like 20 acres. I mean, not a whole lot you can do, but, you know, you thin a couple of them out, you might help. You know, you look at it, it's case to case, you know, but, you know, it's easy to complain that there's something wrong, but it's a lot harder to see that and go, well, shit, now I got to do something about it. I see it, now I know I got to do something. And it's a lot harder at that point. It's easier to turn a blind eye to it and say, screw it. It is what it is. It just sucks. Turkey hunting sucks here.
Yeah, I don't know. And that is a hot topic in Pennsylvania. People are saying turkey numbers are down.
Yeah, we get to start too late. I know. There's a shit ton of different, you know, excuses and bitches and gripes, but you know, it is what it is. I mean, the guys who know what the hell they're doing, who are, went to school for this, and that's their job.
Yeah.
I mean, they're the ones who set the limits, the bag limits in the season. So I got to, you know, it is what it is. They know way more than I do, so.
That is true. I don't know. I'm not experiencing less turkey. Around the house here, I think I have been, but I think it's also because I've been hunting turkeys around the house, and now they're just enough. Like,
all right, not as many of them.
We're not going to go up there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Bobby just got shot in the head last week, you know?
But like two fields down on my road, it was like 2 weeks ago, it was one of those insane, it was like turkey orgies. It was like
what?
60 turkeys in this field.
No shit.
Multiple gobblers chasing each other, flying up in the air. It was wild. But
it is cool to see.
But I haven't seen a turkey on my property. And I mean, we're talking 400 yards to where this was happening. But I have not seen one up here.
Well, things are changing. This is the time of year when they start to break up. You know, I mean, all winter long, you'll see them all together. You'll see groups of gobblers. You'll see groups of hens. You see the hens with the poults. You see all that. So now it's starting to kind of change the dynamic and the structure of the flocks, I guess.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. But you might have some gobblers running around here before you know it.
This is always my secondary place to hunt anyway. Like, a lot of times I'll, like, use my second tag here, you know, and it'll just be, like, by chance. I hear one gobble. I grab my stuff, run out back. And call them in without a shirt on.
Yeah, in your underpants.
In my underpants sometimes. Yeah. In Converse.
John Daly.
Just like.
Pull the old John Daly.
Just like a big dip in, even though I don't chew.
With a flat brim hat on. Yeah, you're all over it.
Exactly. That's probably enough for this podcast.
I think so.
We went all over the place. I would like to end it with something I looked up while you were telling your story.
Right. Yeah.
This song is called The Yellow-Rumped Warbler.
Really? I didn't think there was a thing. Oh.
Back in high school, I used to listen to this band called Ornithologists, and they're out of Australia, and it's like math experimental, like progressive rock. It just might sound like noise to some people, but that's the Yellow-Rumped Warbler. Okay,
that's something.
Yeah, so they're awesome.
Well, thank you for that.
Yeah. maybe I'll put it on so everyone can like
the actual song.
Yeah,
so everyone can listen to it. Yeah, because blasting it through the microphone and the headphones was awesome.
That was a good move.
Touche.
Anyway, we'll be back with another episode, I don't know, in a couple weeks.
Yeah. Good luck turkey hunting. Hey, let us know if you get anything, if you got anything in your pack that you just cannot live without.
Yeah.
Shoot us a message. Let us know what you think. Because we're always up for learning new shit, you know?
Yeah. If it's
freaking
vinyl
harnesses,
harness,
keep it to yourself.
Yeah. Don't unfollow me. Okay. Bye.